Hi, this is Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the Sonic Scoop podcast. And today, we're going to be talking about why I don't trust cheap mastering engineers. And no, this is not me digging against other mastering engineers as much as me just relating some issues I had when I was mixing and some of the frustrations I sometimes ran into when dealing with mastering engineers. This is not to say that all inexpensive mastering engineers are bad mastering engineers, but these are some of the key problems that I've noticed have come up again and again and again on projects out there, whether they're friends' projects, projects I recorded, projects I mixed, projects I produced, or just projects I've heard about. These are the failure points that often come up at the mastering process. And actually, spoiler alert, this can happen sometimes when you work with really expensive mastering engineers, so it's something to watch out for. But if you are mastering or going to work with a mastering engineer who's not crazy expensive, these are the things where if you look out for them, you're going to have a much better project, much better result. And if you're in tune for these things, you'll come out, I think, better no matter what happens and no matter what you're doing. This week's episode does have sponsors. We always have sponsors. I'm going to do the briefest of sponsor shout-outs and we'll give a bigger dig to our sponsors later on. But just know that this episode is sponsored by, who is it this week? Focusrite. Talking into a lovely Focusrite Claret interface right now. Sound Toys, making some of my favorite plugins in the known universe. And Gear Club. Gear Club, great podcast if you want producer and engineer interviews, some of the best out there. We'll talk more about them later. Let's get right into the meat of this thing. So in the past, when I had to deal with mastering engineers earlier on in my career, I was often frustrated by the process. There was like this mystique about the mastering engineer, right? They're supposed to be this all-knowing, all-powerful, no audio and music better than anyone else people. They're supposed to be in this job where they're like the final true experts who are going to double check everything. But first of all, not all mastering engineers were created equal. And secondly, even if all mastering engineers were created equal, they don't necessarily know what your project should sound like better than you do. And I know this today from having been mastering now for, my goodness, is it 7 years or so already? I'm going to have to look at my own resume and discography to double check. But in the time that I've been mastering, I've come to a greater and greater understanding. The people who know what the end product should sound like more than anyone else is the artist and or producer, maybe to some degree, mix engineer. Those are the people who really know what the final sound should be like. But maybe in some cases, they're having trouble getting all the way there. Maybe in some cases, they're having trouble articulating what they wanted, or maybe in some cases they know that they're pretty much there and they just want you to not mess it up. And good mastering, I think, comes out of an understanding. The mastering engineer can kind of get into the head and ears of the client a little bit. And this is one of the failure points that comes up again and again, whether it's an inexpensive new mastering engineer, a mastering algorithm, we'll talk about that later on, or an expensive mastering engineer who just isn't totally in tune with the project. So there are two major problems you can run into, and I will give you my experience with these. The first one is that potentially some of these particularly inexpensive mastering engineers, but not just the inexpensive ones, can sometimes master your project in a preset way. And I experienced this on one of the very first records I ever mixed for money way back in, you're going to make me remember the year, would it have been 2003, something like that? And one of these first records I ever mixed for money was going to go to the mastering engineer, the person who's been doing this longer than me, who should know better than me, and it came back sounding worse. I hemmed and hawed on these mixes, and maybe you've had a similar experience in your own life. I hemmed and hawed and went back and forth on these mixes. They were a little too fat, a little too thick, a little bit too muddy, a little bit too murky in the lower mid-range, and I ended up kind of cutting things out more and more, and the more I listened to it in other systems and in the car and all these places, the more I realized I had to suck out some of that low mid stuff and kind of tighten things up and clean things up. And in the final mixes, in a lot of ways, they were better balanced than the original mixes I had done, but they were missing some of the grit and earth and all of this stuff. And I said to the artist slash producer on this project I had mixed, hey, we're really liking where these mixes are, but I think they're just they should be fatter. They should definitely go in there, kind of thicken them up a little bit. They should get back some of the fatness we have had before, but with still having this clarity that we've developed. And hopefully you can communicate that to the mastering engineer. Hopefully he did. I wasn't in direct contact with the mastering engineer on this project. And the masters came back and they sounded exactly the opposite of that. Right? They sounded thinner. They sounded to me like it was like, you never talk through like a tin can with a string. Like that is how these masters ended up coming back. And I got to tell you, that's what ended up getting released. Now I exaggerate slightly. It wasn't literally sounding like it was coming through a tin can, but what happened is this mastering engineer did probably the kind of preset thing he's used to in a lot of projects. He's used to getting mixes coming in. And as a mastering engineer, I can tell you 70, 80% of mixes that come in to my studio need to get a little bit brighter. And maybe they need to have some lower mid-range cut out. Maybe they need a little bit more control in these sub-frequencies that are louder than the mixing engineer realized. It happens a lot, but it doesn't happen all the time. And it didn't happen with these mixes that I submitted to this guy. So he did the exact opposite process that he should have. This was one of those 20 or 30% of records that needed to be fattened up because I did all that cleaning and tightening already, and he needed to correct me in the other direction, and he didn't. And I still regret it because I think that was a wonderful record, wonderful music, a wonderful experience making it with those people, but I still hear the final product, and I'm like, ah, if I could just go back and remaster that one of these days. But this is over 10 years ago now, so my window for that has probably closed. But otherwise, really fun record, but it's hard for me to listen all the way through to the end. Because the first song sounds good. Second song sounds good, but it's a little too bright. Third song, fourth song, and it just, after a while, you get a little fatigued by that brightness. And there I felt like the mastering engineer had failed me, and it failed the artist. But I did not have the courage to say to this, even this relatively inexpensive mastering engineer, no, I know what my records just sound like better than you, or my client's records just sound like better than you. Do it again. Make it right. You took it in the wrong direction. And I think you have to have courage like that in talking to your own mastering engineer. And I want you to have that courage if you ever master a record with me. And I'll tell you, the biggest, best mastering engineers out there, if you work with Greg Calbi or Bob Ludwig or my mentor, Joe Lambert, you know, these really great people, they also want to know for sure what you really feel like your record should sound like, whether they took it in the right direction, whether you're ultimately happy with it. Because all of those people, myself included, are going to have instincts about where this thing could go. But we want to know that it's also in the direction you were anticipating for it to go. So communication is important. And working with mastering engineers who aren't just going to put you through a preset process is important. This still happens to this day. I get to master records often for second time. I cost anywhere from 2 times more to 10 times more the cheapest mastering engineers out there, right? You can find guys who will do it for 10 or 15 bucks an hour. You can find people who will do it for 50 bucks an hour. I'm more in that, you know, $100 an hour-ish range. And there's people who charge a lot more than me. But I often master records that were mastered by someone in one of those cheaper ranges. The artist wasn't happy with it. And then they come to me. And so often that preset mastering thing comes up where this just happened recently, a few months ago, a friend of mine came to me. They went to someone who was going to master their entire 10 song record for $150. And that master came back to them and it sounded worse than the original mix. It was louder than the original mix. It was brighter than the original mix. But this person is used to mastering heavy metal records. And he took his heavy metal approach to this folk duo. And the record came back really loud, really bright, really limited, really smashed. And it would have been exactly the right thing for certain types of heavy metal records. And dealing with the kinds of mixes he's used to getting, it probably would have been exactly the right thing. But long story short, it wasn't exactly the right thing for this earthy folk duo who actually wanted their record to go in a warmer direction rather than a brighter direction. So that is something that still happens constantly. And it's something that I want you to be on the watch for. Preferably communicate to your mastering engineer, get references into their ear, tell them about records you love the sound of, and really, you know, listen to the things that come back, make sure you're happy with them, and never settle unless you think the final result sounds better to you. And don't just go by, well, they're the authority, they're the mastering engineer. Whether they charge $10 a song or $100 a song, $300 a song, don't just trust their authority. Use your own ears and level matched. Figure out for yourself whether this record really sounds better after mastering, whether it really went in the right direction. There are some people who mix at a fairly high level who are mistrustful of mastering engineers because of having that kind of experience more than once. All right. The second thing that can go wrong in a mastering project is that a mastering engineer can do a little bit a step better. Instead of doing a preset mastering where they're making things brighter and hotter and smashing it and saying, done, this is the thing I did all records, they can do one thing better and do like more of an algorithmic process. And this is a little bit what like the robot mastering engineers like Lander and E-Master do. An algorithmic process is a little bit more if-then, right? This is a step up from give me anything and I will cut 400 hertz and boost 10K and say, wham, bam, thank you, man, we're all done. The step up is there is a baseline of like a neutral, and we want to get this record as close to that neutral baseline as possible. So if you have too much low end compared to kind of neutral, say Pink Noise being the ideal neutral for music, if you have too much low end, we want to bring it down. If you have too much high end, we want to bring that down. If you have too little high end, we want to bring that up. So we get it to this kind of neutral. And we're almost doing applying some intelligence or artificial intelligence to say, how far are we away from neutral and how do we get back to neutral? And that can be okay. It's definitely better than the first problem, but it's still not ideal because honestly, good art isn't neutral. Good art is like a reaction to the environment that we're in. It's a conversation with other artists and other releases that have been out there. So sometimes records come out and they shock us into being like, whoa, that was cool and unexpected and interesting because it's so much darker and earthier and warmer than other records that are out there. And it's just not what we've been hearing recently. Or in other periods, it'll be a totally different thing. Oh man, it's so much brighter and tighter and open and there's so much more air on it than other records. Or it can be, oh, it's so much more bombastic and hairy and gritty and distorted. And music goes through these kinds of, I don't want to just call them fashion changes because I find that's maybe a little bit denigrating, but these evolutions in style and feel and flavor, and people get worn out on certain tones and they want new tones. They want to rediscover things from the past. They wanted to discover new things, see where things will go next. And that is always playing around with perfectly neutral. We're always getting away from perfectly neutral. So that is one thing. The contrast between your release and other releases and what releases should sound like or not sound like, what era should it sound like, should it sound like it's a new era, all that kind of stuff means straying from neutral potentially and having a mastering engineer who knows what you're going for and can help enhance that. So that is the ideal. And the other place where this kind of contrast can come into play is within your own record. Again, I remember another record I mixed, maybe this was back in 2008, something like that, had some success. It was on a, you know, an independent label that was, you know, a fairly big one, but we had to go back to mastering 3 times because this time I learned from my past mistakes and I wasn't going to settle for a not good enough master. So we went back to this probably $50 track mastering engineer a few times. And one of the things that bugged me is I was trying to create contrast in this record. Like it was such an eclectic record. You think of something like, you know, Beck's Odelay or something like that, or, you know, a few of the Beck records where there's really a melange, like a stylistic melange going on. And there are, you know, those Beck records that are like that, if you've ever heard Beck, like there are genre shifts and there are tonality shifts. And that was in these productions. And I wanted to enhance that in the mixes. So you'd have one track where the kick drum really had most of its stuff going on, like a knocky 100 hertz area. But then you'd have another track where the kick drum is really about the 50 hertz that was going on and the bass was sitting on top of that. So you'd have these shifts in these low end, completely intentional shifts. And every once in a while, one track was ending in one mood and there was this beautiful, I don't want to say jarring, but just contrast that would come next. And that was the idea. The low end is supposed to shift. But when I got these masters back, the mastering engineer took those few songs that had more of that sub energy and just reduced that sub energy so it fit really seamlessly next to the stuff that didn't have that kind of sub energy. Now, there are certain times when that's the right thing to do. And you can kind of tell if you're a good mastering engineer, or you can have a conversation with the artist, whether they're going for contrast or whether that contrast is accidental. And in this case, I thought it was pretty damn clear that this kick drum sounds totally different than the prior one because this is a genre shift and a texture shift. And now you're making this mix with all the subs, you're taking it away. We've completely lost the point of the mix, and it just doesn't sound right because you were trying to do the thing that mastering is supposed to do, right? To make things sound much more even, much closer to the bass line, to make each track flow more seamlessly into the one before. But that wasn't the goal here. The goal was contrast and an eclectic feel. And there's a lot of really great records that have that kind of eclectic feel. But it takes a mastering engineer who knows that that's what's supposed to be happening, that record, to respect that and to not steamroll over the variations in tonality that are supposed to come up from one track to the next. There are so many more examples of this. I mean, there are records where I master them and I have to make choices. Like, they're an eclectic thing. And say there's some tracks that are done mostly drum machine, and there's some tracks that are done, you know, mostly acoustic instruments. And the drum machine ones, you can get them to sound so much better, so much louder than the acoustic instrument ones. We could do a whole episode about why that's the case. So you have a couple of choices here. One is to take those more acoustic tracks and slam them. And maybe on some projects that's appropriate. You want really pushed, slammed acoustic tracks that sound hyper real and bombastic, and that's a certain production aesthetic. But on other projects, you want to do the exact opposite, and you want to hold back those electronic tracks a little bit so they sit well next to the more acoustic-y tracks on the record. That way, you don't have to slam the acoustic tracks for them to sit more seamlessly next to one another. But sometimes you want to do something the opposite and allow for that contrast. And song positioning can allow you to do that on an album, as well as, you know, pushing some things but not pushing other things, and then putting like making sure there's a bridging track in between them so you don't necessarily have to worry about too jarring of a change. But all of this stuff comes down to taste, comes down to human beings who are listening to records all the time, having these conversations with the artist, with the producer about how they should play out, how they should feel, and then acting on them. And it doesn't come from preset mastering. It doesn't even come from the next better step up, algorithmic mastering. It comes from taste, knowing that the artist and the producer, their say in how the record should sound is not just as important to mastering as the mastering engineers, but more important. And I guess those are the kind of things that bugged me about mastering engineers. And it was more common of the cheap mastering engineers in my experience. That said, there are people who have that kind of bad experience with really expensive mastering engineers on occasion. And there are some less expensive mastering engineers who totally get this stuff. I like to think that hopefully I was once one of them. When I started mastering for the first time, I was charging $40 and $50 a track just because I wasn't confident yet and I wanted to get more of that experience. But then as I became experienced enough to say, I know that I can do this as well as, I don't want to sound cocky here, but as well as the best mastering engineers out there, in that we're going to be listening to this record next to all of your favorite records. And I think if you got someone even more experienced than me, even more expensive than me, even better than me in some ways, they wouldn't make this record sound significantly better. They would make it sound different. And once I got there is once when I started charging more. But a big part of that came from learning to have conversations with the clients, knowing that I was going to give them free revisions no matter what, and encouraging them. It's like, here's how I think it should sound. If it's a remote session and we're not doing it together, we're not in the same room, and I can't, you know, go back and forth with the two different ways I could think it could sound, here's how I think it should sound. And in some cases when I'm not sure, here's an alternate. You tell me which direction you like better. And if you need any tweaks from here, you let me know, and I'm just going to do them. And that, just giving them the option, having the conversation, makes it so that my actual revision rate is very low. Like, the number of projects that actually get revised is pretty low. The number of tracks, the number of repeats, pretty low, because I'm doing that work upfront. And I guess in mastering, I just always wanted to avoid the issues I had when I was mixing and I was working on projects, because it's a fraught thing. When you go to that mastering engineer, you're supposed to trust, they're supposed to be the most expert person to touch the project. And then your project comes back worse and you're dissatisfied, but you don't feel like you're qualified to say anything about it, that kind of thing. It's just not a fun experience or feeling. And I think some of the best mastering engineers on the planet understand that. And it's one of the reasons they can command the rates that they can, is because they're doing that thing that I'm trying to do, which is to get inside the head and the ears of the artist, of the producer, figure out where they really intended for the record to go, and make sure it gets there, but hopefully even better sounding than that. That's the goal anyway, right? Well, I hope this ranty episode about mastering and why I don't trust inexpensive mastering engineers, I'll title it something like that, just for the clickbaitiness of it. I hope this one has been useful for you. Let me know. Have you had experiences like this? Let me know in the comments down below, or if you're listening to the audio-only version, shoot me an email at podcast@sonicscoop.com. I read every single one that comes in, and I do read all those comments too. This has been useful for you. Like it, share it. Share it with audio engineer friends of yours. Share it with mastering engineer friends of yours, either very quietly, as I'm not dropping a hint or anything, or share it to really good ones. And if you feel like, man, this totally explains why you're my favorite mastering engineer, and you can share it with them too. So like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. I got some free stuff for you, but real quick first, I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsors. Stay tuned for the free stuff. Sponsors this week, Soundtoys, making some of my favorite mixing effects out there. Try out anything they make for free at soundtoys.com. Also, the Gear Club podcast. Great podcast, great producer-engineer interviews. You got to check them out. A ton of 5-star ratings on that one. Check them out, gear-club.net, or type in Gear Club wherever you get your podcast. If you want to drop us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, that would be much appreciated too. And last but not least, Focusrite. Am I talking through a Focusrite interface right now? Yes, I am. A Claret 3. They sent me this one. It is lovely. Totally works. Does the job I need it to do for the podcast. Great bang for the buck stuff. And now here's the free stuff. You want to learn more about mastering? I've got a free mastering workshop for you called Mastering 101. It's just a little primer on everything you should expect out of the mastering process. The very basics on what I'm thinking about when I'm mastering and the kind of overall approach to it. You can get that at sonicscoop.com/mastering101. That's sonicscoop.com/mastering101. Whether you're looking to master or get your stuff mastered, I think it's insanely useful. If you want a full-length course on mastering, I got that too. Mastering Demystified. You can check it out at masteringdemystified.com. And if you want even more free stuff, go to sonicscoop.com. Go to sonicscoop.com/contest. We've got a giveaway happening every other week. We have them pretty much the entire year. We give away $100,000 worth of free stuff every year. So go to sonicscoop.com/contest to see what we're giving away this time. And while you're there, go to the newsletter and sign up for the newsletter there right after you've subscribed and hit the notifications bell here. This has been Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. Oh, and if you want me to master your records, I'll master your records for you too. So if you're looking for someone to do that stuff with, I also master records. You can get me at justincoletti.com or email me, podcast@sonicscoop.com. Enough of me shilling for myself. Is it shilling when you're doing for yourself? You tell me. This has been Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. Thanks for hanging out with me. See you next time.